Next up, another great writer, great speaker, friend of every single person in this room. He really needs no introduction to this audience. The editor at The Nation, at the Capital Times, my good friend and yours, John Nichols.
Thank you. Thank you. Brother Chris Hedges. I will tell you that you are in a room where people have practiced mass civil disobedience. I saw it, and I saw the power of 180,000 Wisconsinites who surrounded their capital and who demanded economic and social justice and labor rights, and who stood there not alone, but with the whole of this country and the whole of this world saying, yes, it is not enough to vote. It is not enough to send letters. It is not enough to send emails. When they wrote that Constitution, they were exactly right. We have a right to assemble and to petition for the redress of grievances. And we have a right to assume that our elected officials will listen to us and act in our name and in our interest. And so I know you have heard them tonight. I know you have applauded them tonight. But brothers and sisters, please welcome once more. I just want to bring them out once more. Don't applaud as they walk out. But I want Mandela Barnes and Chris Taylor and Melissa Sargent and Therese Berceau and Diane Hesselbein, who stole my La Follette cheerleader jacket. I want them to come out here and stand in front of you. And I want you to understand that they heard you when you surrounded that Capitol. They stood with you. They voted to protect collective bargaining. They voted to protect our schools. They voted to stop the voter ID laws. These are your representatives, brothers and sisters, and they deserve your standing ovation.
Thank you. You can go sit down now.
Ladies and gentlemen, the state representatives have stood for you at every turn of that fight.
Now I know, look, I understand that sometimes elections don't turn out the way people would like. I realize that. I've seen the results. I recently, and I do this so you don't have to, I recently read Paul Ryan's new book. And I must say, he is a fine-looking man. Oh, that front cover, that's a beautiful cover. Did you know, I love that sort of royal, that sort of regal front cover. Did you see that? Paul Ryan, he's walking through a crowd of people, but they're all sort of separated from him by a rope, so they can look but not touch. That's our congressman, Paul Ryan. I love Paul. No, I revere Paul Ryan. His dad and my dad, they went to law school together. We come out of the same part of Wisconsin. We went to the same kind of public schools, but it appears I had different teachers. And I will tell you, I know he went to school in Janesville, and I have great regard for Janesville, but it appears that by the time Paul Ryan got to that high school, the people who taught Russ Feingold had retired. So Paul Ryan said in an interview, this was a serious interview. He was with Glenn Beck. Paul Ryan said, "What I have been trying to do is indict the entire vision of progressivism. And he said, progressivism is the source of everything that's evil in this country. All the harms, all the damage to this country. He's just ripping away on it. Now, they never do this in Wisconsin, mind you, but Paul Ryan, he goes down to Oklahoma and talks about how bad progressivism is. Now, the amazing thing was when he said he's trying to indict progressivism, Glenn Beck interrupted him in the middle of the interview, and he said, I love you. Now, I had no problem with that because I am from Wisconsin, where we are soon going to allow same-sex couples to marry. We're going to allow LGBT people to have their full rights. I got no trouble with that. I don't care. And I know a man can express his affection for another man, and it has nothing to do with sexuality. But Glenn Beck, he said, I love you. And then they kind of went back and forth, and Glenn Beck said, you know, I think it's important to understand that progressivism, it's a cancer. And Paul Ryan said, exactly. Because he wasn't disagreeing with Glenn Beck. So that's interesting. Do you know what else is interesting? My governor, Scott Walker, I know we're not supposed to mention his name, but my governor, Scott Walker, he went down to Arizona when he was in the great state of Arizona. Because remember, they never say these things in Wisconsin. He went down to Arizona, and he was speaking to the Goldwater Institute, people who celebrated presidential campaigns as successful as any that Scott Walker will ever run. Oh, my gosh, they're down there at the Goldwater Institute. And Scott Walker, he said, you know, when I got elected governor of Wisconsin in 2010 when nobody voted, when I got elected governor of Wisconsin, they swore me in up there on the second floor of the state capitol. But, you know, in Wisconsin, for decades before, everybody had been sworn in front of the bust of Robert M. La Follette. Now, he's one of those progressive governors. Everybody up there, they think he's such a big deal. But you know what I did? This is Scott Walker. He's down in Arizona. He says, you know what I did? I moved my swearing-in ceremony over to the other side of the Capitol so that I wouldn't have to have my swearing-in messed up with by that Bob La Follette. No, I'm serious. He went down to Arizona to tell him that. And I thought to myself, what do these people fear so much about Bob La Follette? What do they fear so much about the Wisconsin progressive tradition? What is it? What is it about progressivism that so terrifies Paul Ryan and Scott Walker, Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh? What is it that makes them talk and talk and talk about how evil it is, how frightening it is? Well, I will tell you one thing about it that scares the wits out of them, and that is that Robert M. La Follette refused to allow this country to enter into illegal and immoral wars without the authorization of Congress. And even if Congress did authorize, if the roar was wrong, he said it was wrong. He stood against wars that should not be fought. Robert M. La Follette was an anti-war U.S. senator. He was an anti-militarist U.S. senator. Robert M. La Follette said that this country should be standing for peace, not for war. Oh, and they don't like that. That scares them. Because if one person stands up and says, maybe a war is a bad idea, if one person objects, sometimes people out in America start to say, well, I guess I can feel comfortable raising my objection as well. And you start to get this dialectic going on where at the end of the day, we realize that maybe it just doesn't work to keep fighting war after war after war. We've had four presidents of the United States announce that they were going to bomb Iraq because somehow that was going to make things right. Well, when something doesn't work four times, I got a feeling it might not work the fifth time either. And Robert M. La Follette didn't have fear of saying that, but Robert M. La Follette wasn't just about the wars abroad, he was about the wars at home. People need to understand, when Robert M. La Follette was rising, when he was coming to power,
He stood against racism and sexism and hatred of other ethnicities. He stood on behalf of the embattled minorities like Germans. Not kidding you. There was great battles in this state back 100 years ago. They said, well, we don't want those German kids speaking German in schools. Now today they say, oh, we don't want those Mexican-American kids speaking Spanish in the schools. We don't want those Polish-American kids speaking Polish. We don't want anybody speaking any language but English. Well, brothers and sisters, Robert M. La Follette understood that we all came, except for our Native American friends, we all came from someplace else, and we brought a different language when we came. What makes us together is not an English language. It is an understanding of basic human and democratic values. And Robert M. La Follette said that 100 years ago. The most important thing he did, and the only reason I come before you tonight to talk about him as I always do, the most important thing he did was recognize that the greatest violence, often the greatest violence that is done to us, is an economic system, an economic injustice that says we have the money to go fight whatever war comes onto the scene. We have the money to give whatever tax break we want to do. But boy, we can't find the money to give a child food stamps. We can't find the money to feed kids in our public schools. We can't find the money to do housing. We can't find the money for education. We can't find the money for anything but what the military-industrial complex and the corporations tell us they need. Well, brothers and sisters, Robert M. La Follette said that is wrong, and I say that is wrong. And you know, sometimes we can get weary, and we can feel a little overwhelmed. We can say we've been at this for a long time. We get beat. Sometimes. We lose sometimes. And you know, if any of this was about a short-term struggle, if any of this was about just coming in, showing up, and getting what we want and then leaving, well, then we'd have a right to feel weary. We'd have a right to feel abused. We'd have a right to feel overwhelmed. But none of this is about our self-satisfaction. This struggle is about creating a humane and decent country. And the bottom line is, it began more than 200 years ago, and it will never end as long as there are human beings who say, as Jefferson did, that the great mass of humanity was not born to be ridden, booted, and spurred by an elite few. The great mass of humanity was born to rule their own lives, to rule their own destiny. That is an economic message, but that is a human message. I come from the most rural places in Wisconsin. My great-grandfather was the village president of Blue River, Wisconsin. My mother was born down by the Wisconsin River. She was the granddaughter. She was the granddaughter of the guy who organized for Robert M. La Follette and John Blaine down in southwestern Wisconsin. They only let two publications in the house, the Progressive Magazine and the Capital Times from Madison. My mother taught me that the United States is not the policeman of the world. And my mother taught me that I was not better than anybody else. And my mother taught me that when I said I wasn't better than anybody else, that meant not just race and class and creed. It also meant, from an economic standpoint, that everyone had a right to an equal education, to an equal chance in this society. My mother taught me the basic faith of economic and social justice, of peace and anti-militarism. And my mother is sitting in the front row tonight, Mary Nichols.
And she is so embarrassed. And that is very kind of you to applaud to my mother, but I will tell you that none of that applause satisfies her a bit. She is a machine. You do not want to get in her way. Because my mother believes that applause is nice, kind words are nice, but if you want to stand in the Wisconsin progressive tradition of my great-grandfather, of my grandparents, of my mother, if you want to stand in the great Wisconsin progressive tradition, you don't just applaud, you open up your wallet. I'm not kidding. No. This is not a free ride, brothers and sisters. We don't come here to Fighting Bob Fest, you know, simply to feel good. We don't come here to hear great speeches. We come here to make sure that the fundraising buckets are full. And we do it for a reason. Fighting Bob Fest is done without any real budget. Fighting Bob Fest started 12 years ago as George Bush was preparing to take this country to war in Iraq. Fighting Bob Fest came at a time when there was virtually no infrastructure going. And what people decided to do is, no, we're going to get together. We're going to get together every year in an old-fashioned Chautauqua, in an old-fashioned progressive tradition, and we are going to gather together, and we're going to believe that the people will come and that they will support this struggle. And the fact is, we have never been let down by the people. Year after year after year, it has worked. And the reason it works is because you give enough this year so that next year we can do it again. It doesn't cost much money to do Fighting Bob Fest. There's no staff. There's no big, giant operation. There's no office. Fighting Bob Fest is you. You Wisconsinites are the people who make it work. And brothers and sisters, we're going to have, I know we have people with buckets. They look a little like vampires. You cannot drive them away. But they're going to come among you tonight, brothers and sisters, and they're going to ask you for a couple bucks. Give what you can. If it's only 100, that's okay. If you're a Koch brother and it's only 1 million, that's okay. But brothers and sisters, you got to give something. You got to give something because we are on a victory train. We're going someplace, brothers and sisters. We have had disappointment. We have had defeat. But brothers and sisters, it does not last long. Robert M. La Follette ran for governor once and he got beat. Robert M. La Follette ran for governor a second time and he got beat. But the third time, he got elected governor of Wisconsin. Well, I just want to tell you, the forces of progressivism, they got beat in 2010. They got beat in 2012. But brothers and sisters, 2014 is the third time. And brothers and sisters, I know that this progressive state will be redeemed. We're coming back. So pay your fare on that victory train. Be a part of this struggle. Solidarity, brothers and sisters, solidarity. Get in there, come on. Why you get that money? You got something going on here, Matt? What do you got happening?